Hello, this is indeed Utah Phillips, the golden voice of the great Southwest, and you're, in fact, listening to Loafer's Glory, the hobo jungle of the mind. Yes, it's me, Utah Phillips here. I am with Steve Baker, who's once again twirling the knobs and pushing the slides. The music is the Borisdorfs there, interrupted briefly by Dan Scanlon, an old friend here in Nevada City, a student, a scholar of the ukulele, playing his rendition of Aloha Oi, since that's going to be the gist of today's program, for which I would like to thank very much the ace record finder, Glenn Howard, who has never bailed out on me once. Everything I've asked for, he's been able to find. I have these residual memories of recordings from my childhood, my boyhood, or heard somewhere, and I just give him the barest hint, and he goes out and finds it. Also like to thank the wonderful people at KKCR on the island of Kauai, who sent me things about the sovereignty movement of which I was completely unaware. And, of course, thanks to Dan Scanlon, who has brought me up to date on the history of a lot of different things. We are here at radio station KVMR in the foothills of the Sierra Nevada. We call them foothills, of course, because it's spelled that way. Nevada City now, of course, today. This is Sunday here. I don't care much what time it is when you're listening to this or when. This is Sunday, and in Nevada City, and this is our own Mardi Gras called Joe Kane Day. This is a day when the town goes legally berserk, and in the evening hours, finally subsiding into an alcoholic torpor. Hawaii. I guess it was in January of 1778, the Hawaiians were going about their business. They were eating taro root or they were fishing, whatever Hawaiians did. And they looked up and discovered Captain Cook. Now, Captain Cook, of course, was laboring under the illusion that he had discovered them. But then that was a time, the imperial age, when Christianity had drawn an illuminated circle, a circle of light around Europe, that pimple sticking out of the butt of Asia, this circle of light, and everything in the basked in that light was known and understood, and everything else was dark and unknown and waiting to be discovered. Ha-ha. So Europeans spread out like ants, like larvae, like cockroaches, and sort of took over the world, took over every piece of territory that wasn't nailed down, kind of muscled everybody who got in the way, offering the dubious benefits of civilization, and of course, always waving that ridiculous book. Well, nonetheless, Captain Cook was warmly welcomed to Hawaii. Of course, the greeting deteriorated fairly rapidly. Captain Cook lost his life as a consequence of that. But when he came ashore, probably the first thing he heard was an ole. It's a chant, the hale mai. It's a call for the multitudes to assemble in the presence of the chiefs. Let's listen to it.
Adalani de hele mai ne da wara i na da i da i o la ve a e e a e a e e Yo bulu bulu ia e te te hui lu na o ia tlau. E ia e vidi mai o e ia ho e no da gibi ne na na i o na ui o o va. Ia ho i o i de alo ai do to e. E tu e olo noa e olo e i ge ia ua nei o do ui e i. Do ni ni a me do nai na e a e a e a e a e a e a e no a no kalan.
He came dancing upon the silver waves, his feet lightly tripping over the froth, his flesh glistening with the wild sea spray blowing. He came with laughter shining in his eyes, wreathed in golden blossoms, his loins girded with mountain vines, and in his hair were ferns of the valleys, fragile and fragrant. He was Laka, the golden youth, the forever young, the child of beauty. And Laka called upon the ocean, upon the deep waters flowing, raise up for me the songs of the sea, that I might hear them again, and remember in my heart how sing the ocean tides. Out of the very depths of you, raise up for me a song and sing to me. Tell me of the ancient lands that are no more, that have vanished into the deeps of thee. Tell me of the lost shores that are departed from the face of earth to be seen no more. Tell me who sleeps in the dark bosom of thee. O thou many islands that sail the breast of the ocean of these great waters that are the sea of Kanaloa, of Kanaloa who is the god, the brother of Kane and of Ku, of Kanaloa who sustaineth life, O thou island of Hawaii, sing to me. And when Laka was done, he sat in silence and brooded over the days that were to come. He looked upon the morrows that were to come. He looked upon the distant dawns that had not, as yet, arisen out of the sea. He looked upon them, and he wept. Read there was a part of the creation story, and then what you just heard was Hula Pahu. It's about the pillars that support the sky. Well, let's fast forward a little bit and find out what I've got to do with all this. Here's a kid during the Second World War, freezing in Dayton, Ohio. 3-4 feet of snow on the ground in a flat-top duplex. My father worked over at the Army Air Corps base. And a book falls into my hands from our little school library up in the center part of the village. And the book had a palm tree on the front, which seemed exotic to me considering where I was. The name of the book was The Memory Room. It was by Don Blanding, called the Hawaii Poet. Well, he was not a real great poet. I'm sure he meant what he had to say, but it was a style of poetry that you wouldn't call great, but nonetheless did grip me in my situation. He wrote things like Hawaiian Driftwood. Some of us drift to these shores on the trade winds, drift here to linger. The days slip along. Autumn and summer, the spring and the winter pass like the uncounted notes of a song. Some of our hearts find their roots and blossom harder each day to depart if one lingers. Hours and days and the months and the seasons trickle like water and sand through our fingers. Don Blanding. But of course, what arrested my attention in the book was the front piece, which was a photograph of Don Blanding in a double-breasted white Palm Beach suit, standing on the pontoon of one of those great China Clipper seaplanes, obviously getting ready to be transported to Manila and Yokohama and places too fierce to mention. Well, if you were a kid freezing in Dayton, Ohio during the Second World War, wouldn't that just tickle your imagination? One of my great dreams is still somehow to fly on a China Clipper across the Pacific. They had bunks on those things, you know, in a galley for cooking food. Well, it was the romance, you know, moving from the reality of Hawaii. I grew up with the myth of Hawaii, of the trade winds and the bending palm trees. I've told you before about my crystal set lying in bed at night under the covers, so I couldn't be seen because I had a flashlight. And I had my crystal set with the antenna out through a hole in the screen hooked to an apple tree, and I would pop the cat hair around on that germanium crystal. You didn't know what you were going to get. There were little hills and valleys there. You didn't know what was going to come up. Occasionally, quite occasionally, I would pick up this program called Hawaii Calls or Hawaii Calling. I can't remember which one it was. And there would be this dim, crackly voice, and it would say something like, "And now from the veranda of the Royal Hawaiian Hotel, overlooking the beach at Waikiki, we bring you," and then they would play the music of some prominent band that was playing in Hawaii, like this one. Oh, yes, King Benny Nawahi, playing the Hawaiian steel guitar there. And that's what I was listening to over the radio, freezing under my blankets. Now, that Hawaiian steel guitar, that's a regular guitar, with the nut raised and the bridge raised so the strings are high off of the fingerboard. It lays down in your lap, and you run a steel bar up and down there, and it's called slide guitar. Hawaiian steel guitar was invented, they say, about in the 1880s, either by Gabriel Davion, who was from India, or Joseph Kekuku, who was a student at Kamehameha School. Now, Kekuku used a jackknife or the back of a comb to slide it up and down. The open tuning, it's tuned to an open chord there. They got that from the Hawaiian cowboys, who got it from Mexican vaqueros who came over in the 1830s to work on the ranches in Hawaii. And, of course, they brought over that G tuning, which I guess is called a fandango tuning. So the two come together there, and you wind up with the Hawaiian steel guitar. It was Irene West and the Royal Hawaiians in 1910 that toured the United States for the first time and brought that music here for the first time. By 1916, sort of the beginning of the recorded era, Hawaiian music sold more music than any other kind of music in the United States. And the traditional lap steel grew into the pedal steel guitar, and also it gave Black Delta Blues the jackknife and the bottleneck style of playing. American music owes a great debt to Hawaiian music after the turn of the century, and one that has never been completely acknowledged. Well, let's listen to another one of those bands from that era that I would hear coming over from Hawaii Calls. This one I think will be a surprise to you.
On a little bamboo bridge by the waters of Kalua, beneath Hawaiian skies, I fell in love with you. On a little bamboo bridge by the waters of Kalua, we found a paradise, oh paradise for two. While we were gazing in the water, the silver ripples kissed the shore, and your reflections in the water seemed to say you'd be mine forevermore. On a little bamboo bridge by the waters of Kalua, you made my dreams come true, sweetheart, when I found you. While we were gazing in the water, silver ripples kissed the shore, and your reflection in the water seemed to say you'd be mine forevermore. Oh, on the bamboo bridge by the waters of Kaluuya. You made my dreams come true, sweetheart, when I found you.
Well, now, that gives you an idea of the popularity of Hawaiian music. Louis Armstrong was fascinated with Hawaiian music and had his own Hawaiian orchestra once called Louis Armstrong and His Polynesians on a Little Bamboo Bridge. Well, now, I tackled the steel guitar, you know. I could take a pencil and run it under the strings of a guitar on the first fret to raise the strings up. I could never hold on to the damn bar. I'd drop it on my foot, I'd drop it on the floor, I'd drop it in the hole on the guitar and try to get one of those out. And besides which, you know, you listen to something like Tickling the Strings, that Benny Nawahi, and that's pretty complicated. That's single-string music. You don't even hear that on the steel guitar here in country music these days. The only thing left for me was the ukulele. That seemed simpler, easy to tune, four strings, my dog has fleas. Ukulele, again, an instrument from someplace else. 1879, it was Manuel Nunes. He was from the island of Madeira, Portuguese islands in the Atlantic. In 1879, he was an instrument maker. He migrated to Hawaii. There he combined the features of the briguinha and the rajau. Two Portuguese instruments to create the ukulele. It was created. His granddaughter, Flora Fox, was among the Hawaiians who brought the uke to us. And, she performed at the Pan Pacific Exposition in 1915. And it was that exposition which popularized and started the first craze, the first wave of ukuleles all over the country. Oh, and it still is. I think that the first time I ever heard a ukulele being played, though, was again on the radio, and it was old Ukulele Ike. Let's listen to probably the first song I ever heard played on the ukulele and sung. It was by Ukulele Ike. You're going to recognize this voice because it's the voice of Jiminy Cricket in the movie Pinocchio, the Song of Old Hawaii.
There's a perfume of a million flowers clinging to the heart of old Hawaii. There's a rainbow following the showers, bringing me a part of old Hawaii. There's a silver moon, a symphony of stars. There's a hula tune and the hum of soft guitars. There's a trade wind sighing in the heavens, singing me a song of old Hawaii. Yes, there's a perfume of a million flowers clinging to the heart of old Hawaii. There's a rainbow following the showers, bringing me a part of old Hawaii. There's a silver moon, a symphony of stars. There's a hula tune and the hum of soft guitars. There's a trade wind sighing in the heavens, singing me a song of old.
Thank you.
back again. That was Kenny Hall. You're not accustomed to that being used as intermission music, but that's Kenny Hall playing the Hilo March, a Hawaiian favorite. Kenny knows all things. Any kind of music you want, Kenny can play it. Well, there I was now with my ukulele. The first one, I was part of the second Arthur Godfrey ukulele craze. My first ukulele had a little plastic box or a Melmac box on the top three frets, strapped there with buttons on it, and I could push it down and make three or four chords. It's called cheating. But I got tired of that, and pretty soon, yeah, I learned how to make my ukulele chords, and then I learned my Beach Boy stroke and my forward roll and my back roll and all those sorts of things. And I learned from people like May Sengi Breen, a ukulele ike, of course. There were Ora Pate Stewart in Salt Lake who taught the ukulele and had a ukulele show on the radio there all during the 40s. And, well, of course, there was Roy Smek, too. Now, the music I was moving into then, May Sengi Breen and those were ukulele solos. That's where there is a chord for every damn note. And I remember that ukulele chord book that Ukulele Ike put out, page after page of every kind of chord you can imagine, augmented chords, demolished chords, chords where you'd have to go to a chiropractor to get your fingers unbraided when you're done trying to play them. But I got so I could climb around on that neck pretty good. I finally got to get a baritone uke because it was easier to finger. The frets were too close together on the little one. I got a baritone uke. And I got pretty good on the Waltz You Saved for Me and Charmaine, a song from the First World War. But then all the ersatz Hawaiian music, Malahini Mele and Lovely Hula Hands, Mama Don't Want No Peas, No Rice, No Coconut Oil. Ha! I wanted ultimately to be able to play the ukulele like this, Alfredo Canopen on the beach at Waikiki. I didn't quite make it. I never got to where I could play it that fast or that accurately. Isn't that wonderful? Well, yeah, that was Alfredo Canopen on the beach at Waikiki. Well, to this point, you know, I've talked about a kid and his myths, a kid and his dreams of palm trees during a cold Ohio winter. His dream of getting away, of going away, of crossing the Pacific Ocean. And I'm willing to absorb any kind of mythology that's going to reinforce that. It's only in later years, when I left Utah and got around banging into the world, that I found the other Hawaii, the real Hawaii. The Hawaii that is so deep and so rich and so vigorously oppressed by commercialism, by gringoism. There was a young fellow that came through Salt Lake a long, long time ago by the name of Mike McClellan. Now, he'd been a fine fiddler during the folk revival, but had an accident that ruined his hand, and he was on hard times. He used to board over at Rosalie Sorrell's place. He passed through town a number of times, and then when I left Utah in 69, I lost track of him. It was some years later that an LP showed up in the mail. I was surprised it caught up with me. And sure enough, it was the Life of the Land record, Mike and Lorna McClellan, and it was from Hawaii. Part of the emerging ecology movement. This is in the 1970s. The record is on the Topsoil Music, which is Mike's label, and it was a fundraiser for Life of the Land, an environmental research and action group in the state of Hawaii. Engaged in legal action to bring about the enforcement of existing anti-pollution laws, and same thing we're trying to do here on the mainland. And this record was made as a fundraiser for it. This also introduces the slack key guitar. When I was going to youth camp, I've told you this before, Hand to God, Jewish youth camp, Camp Yeladim, at the Methodist College out for the summer. My camp counselor was a Japanese Hawaiian, Tetsuo Okada, who ran this French bakery up on 13th East called Piero's. And I said, I want to learn to play the guitar. And he gave me a guitar, but he tuned it into a slack key, turned it into a monoloa G. And I thought that that's how a guitar was tuned. It's only when I, bummed up to Yellowstone National Park, the guys on the road crew showed me how to make the chords properly, how to tune the guitar properly, and then adapt my ukulele chords for the guitar. What you're going to hear is a slack key, Mike and Lorna McClellan, an old love song from the Hilo region of the island of Hawaii. The images in it are the u'u or o'o bird, the yellow feathers found in the famous Hawaiian featherwork. Well, the bird was thought to be extinct everywhere, but in 1971, a pair was photographed in a nest on the Alakai region of the island of Kauai. Now, the causes of the bird's disappearance were the usual: disease, foreign disease, the destruction of environment by foreign plant-eating animals. Like, for instance, in 1961, the black-tailed deer was released on Kauai and was gradually gnawing its way toward the Alakai Peninsula. Now, I don't know if it made it. This record might be 20 years old. Somebody write me or call me and tell me if those birds have managed to propagate themselves. Anyway, Mike and Lorna McClellan, the Life of the Land record. Let's listen to Manu'o'o.
Oh,
Mike and Lorna McClellan. And a beautiful song. Now, you know, I'm going to mispronounce words here because I've hardly ever heard them spoken. I'm also going to get place names and things like that out of order. And that's because I'm trying to do, as I do everything, trying to do it from memory. That's as we age, we keep our memory skills sharp, don't we? So if I get things scrambled a little bit, that's probably the reason, because I'm trying to summon it all up, dredge it all up from the reaches of my past. I always thought I was a fairly astute political observer. I read the alternative press. I always listen to the alternative radio, of course, community stations wherever I've been in the country. And I thought I was pretty well caught up on movements. It's only lately that mainly because of Erica Wilcox on Kauai, that I discovered the reinstated government of the Kingdom of Hawaii, that there is a reinstated government. You can find out about them, by the way, at their website, www.reinstated.org. The government never gave up. You know, when the place was conquered, actually, through a coup in 1893, the government was simply in exile. It was taken over illegally. But they did reconstitute a new government. I have the Constitution in hand here. The preamble, whereas the Kingdom of Hawaii, having been in exile for 107 years due to an unlawful overthrow of its government de jure, has exercised perfect right to reestablish its proper station as an independent nation within the community of nations. So, yes, they have created a government. I, last week, sat down and picked up the phone, and I called Hawaii, and I had the opportunity to speak to and to interview Mr. Henry Noah, who's the communications director for the reinstated government of Hawaii. Well, now, I think what I would like, first of all, Mr. Noah, some background on some historical background from, say, Kamehameha III and the first constitution in 1840 to annexation in 1896. Could you fill us in on that?
Sure. Well, I think, first of all, what we need to understand is Hawaii was once an independent nation. Unfortunately, in 1893, several United States citizens who were a part of the United States and also citizens that was naturalized into Hawaii's country decided that they wanted to take total control over the islands. And in turn, what they did was they overthrew our monarchy, you know, and that was our sovereignty also. And at the time, it was Queen Liliuokalani who was in charge. And since that period of time, we, the Aboriginal people here, have been trying to restore our sovereignty and regain our independence. It has been difficult, only because that America certainly is a powerful nation, and we have found it quite difficult in trying to work matters out. But what happened is that in 1993, United States Congress and the President of the United States signed an apology resolution, a joint resolution. And that triggered the efforts on behalf of our Aboriginal people here to reinstate that inherent sovereignty that was never relinquished. And this is mentioned in that document.
I think it would be useful for our listeners for me to cite a paragraph from that.
Sure.
Public Law Number 103-150, the indigenous Hawaiian people never directly relinquished their claims to their inherent sovereignty as a people over their national lands to the United States, either through their monarchy or through a plebiscite or referendum, unquote. And that, of course, was the law that was signed by President Bill Clinton. So they acknowledge it, just like, wasn't it President Grover Cleveland who told Congress that the takeover was illegal?
That's correct.
So that was the genesis, then, of the reinstatement movement, was the public law.
That's correct. Well, actually, you got to realize that we the process started on the day of the overthrow. But we didn't get the support from United States Congress or the President to assist us. You got to realize that we're not a big population. We're not a big nation, and it took time to mature. And what ended up happening after the apology bill is that it only heightened the awareness. It finally gave public recognition as to what really happened in Hawaii and how the inherent sovereignty has that natural right to reinstate itself, to begin the process to restore its political authority over the islands, and to begin reinstating other independent facets of a government. So what we have been doing since 1993 is that we have been constructing and setting down our reinstated Hawaiian government.
Which includes a legislative body and a judiciary and so on, executive branch.
We definitely had to fulfill some of the basic requirements of being a nation. And one of it was we began a citizenship drive, you know, signing on people who wish to be a part of our nation in a repatriation and naturalization process. And then out of these citizens who have signed on, then we began the process of establishing temporary offices to serve the government. And then just this past November 1999, we were able to conduct a plebiscite, a nationwide plebiscite for those that had signed on. And it was after that plebiscite that now we had elected officers to serve in the Legislative Assembly. And we currently now have a full staff government functioning within Hawaii, and we are beginning to open up diplomatic ties with other countries, at least opening up the dialogue, and we're definitely getting to a point in full stride.
What kind of statement, since this the struggle that you've been going through is so obscured and has such a low profile in American mass media, now you're talking to a whole collection of community radio stations all over the United States. What statement would you make to the listeners of those about the struggle? What can we do to assist in this effort?
Well, first of all, I think what everybody needs to understand is that, one, we in Hawaii, the Hawaiian people, we have been placed in an unfair situation, in an unfair position. And basically, many of us are in this movement to make the change for justice. Not to mention that many of our properties that belong to our government are currently being used by the United States government. And some properties, they're actually paying $1 a year for one of the most valuable properties that we have. And all I'm asking, the people of the United States is, listen, I believe that if we're standing on democracy, we're standing on justice, I can't see any difference for the Hawaiian people here in Hawaii. You know, I do believe that we did have treaties between the United States government and our country, and that these treaties are still written, they haven't been dissolved, and it's about freedom, friendship, commerce, and navigation. So I think it's a matter of respect, and I truly believe that many people in America didn't understand the plight of Hawaiians, and now that we are stepping out, we can only ask them to support us, by simply stating, I believe that it's time that we make this adjustment and we do what is right.
As I listen to the stories, my
All Hawaii Stand Together, Israel Kamakaui Wo'ole. One of many sovereignty songs that were sent to me by the radio station KKCR in Kauai. Well, I want to thank you very much for letting me wander through my own recollections from the deep past up to the present, taking my own path as I always do. I'd like to fade this out on perhaps my favorite of the Hawaiian melodies, Mark Nelson and Isa Lei. This has been UU Taw Phillips, the aforementioned golden voice of the Great Southwest, and you've been listening to Loafer's Glory, the Hobo Jungle of the Mind. Mahalo.